Welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. Today we'll look at a number of subjects in the news. We'll begin in a moment and talk about John McCain's vice presidential running mate in terms of her Republican feminism, which may seem as like an oxymoron to some people. We'll be speaking to Gloria Steinem, one of America's leading feminist icons, journalist, author, and women's rights advocate. She is one of America's preeminent public intellectuals and is known worldwide for her work on gender, racial, and other civil inequity issues. She's also the co-founder of the Women's Media Center and the author of numerous books, including Outrageous Acts of Everyday Rebellion, Revolutions from Within, and Moving Beyond Words. She had an op-ed published last week in the Los Angeles Times about Sarah Palin titled Wrong Woman, Wrong Message. We'll also talk about the revived Republican presidential campaign and its renewed challenge to the Obama-Biden strategy, particularly in terms of swing states. And we'll be talking with Michael Cohen, who's a senior research fellow at the New America Foundation and the author of Live from the Campaign Trail, The Greatest Presidential Campaign Speeches of the 20th Century and How They Shaped American Policy. He's also served as a speechwriter for Senator Chris Dodd and former UN Ambassador Bill Richardson. He volunteered on a number of Democratic presidential campaigns, and he blogged regularly on campaign stops at the New York Times website. And then we'll do some fact-checking on Republican vice president candidate Sarah Palin with Shannon Moore, who's a top-rated progressive radio broadcaster in Anchorage, Alaska. She pioneered political talk radio for women in the 49th state. And on her program, she has interviewed Republican vice presidential nominee Governor Sarah Palin several times, as well as other American political figures. I'm now speaking with Gloria Steinem, as I mentioned, American feminist icon, the author of a number of books, Outrageous Acts and Everyday Rebellions, Revolution from Within, and Moving Beyond Words. She's also the co-founder of the Women's Media Center, and her op-ed piece in the Los Angeles Times this week was about Sarah Palin was titled Wrong Woman and Wrong Message. It's pretty clear, though, Gloria Steinem, is it not, that that Sarah Palin's choice has been a revival, to use a tabernacle term, has somewhat revived the Republican Party, has it not? I noticed a picture of a rally in yesterday in Colorado, where there were thousands and thousands of people. And prior to this, John McCain was not drawing the crowds that Senator Obama has been drawing. So it appears to me that just in terms of a draw, Sarah Palin has been a winner.
Well, she certainly has got lots of attention because she's new. People are curious about her. I'm curious about her, too. But I noticed in your lead-in, you suggested that she was an example or somebody was suggesting of Republican feminism. Certainly there is Republican feminism. There's Olympia Snowe, there's Christy Todd Whitman, but Palin is definitely not an example. She is really just Phyllis Schlafly, a little bit younger. She's a right-wing extremist who stands against everything that women in this country have demonstrated that they want in public opinion polls and in the gender gap by a majority or plurality. She is the woman who the boss in the office hires, who's unqualified but will put down other women.
And where did this story come that was floating around the coverage of the Republican convention? It was never sourced, but the notion was that the Democrats were floating this idea that how could this woman with five children divide her time between her responsibilities, her domestic responsibilities versus her professional ones?
Not all Democrats are feminists, so there may have been somebody doing that. But as I tried to make clear in my op-ed page piece, that's not acceptable unless you would ask the same question of a father. So I have not done this, and nobody I know who supports women's equality has done this. But the larger point is that she stands against pay equity and flexible hours and childcare and reproductive rights and, you know, everything that women in the labor force need. She's the queen bee. You know, that's an old term for women who stand in the road of other women. That's who she is.
And how did she get on the ticket? I mean, it seems to me that the opening that was provided here in many ways was the fact that the Democrats didn't field their strongest ticket, which obviously was either a combination of Obama or Clinton or Clinton Obama. And mm-hmm. I wonder why that deal wasn't made. But I certainly think, you know, that may be something for future historians to uncover. But assuming it was on the table, it's pretty clear, is it not, that this was a choice based upon the idea, perhaps a mistaken idea on the Republicans' part, that they could peel off Hillary voters.
I suppose they were naive enough to think that. Some of them may have been, but as I was trying to explain, that's like saying, you stole my shoes, so I'm going to amputate my legs. I mean, I don't think, I don't personally know any former Hillary supporter who's been swayed in the least by the selection of Palin. So I think it was much more in the vein of Clarence Thomas. That is, we have to please the ultra-right wing by getting a ultra-right force on the Supreme Court or on this presidential ticket. So let's try to disguise it. Let's hope that some people will be dumb enough to confuse form with content. And be peeled off. But actually, I would say the primary, I don't think the McCain forces are actually dumb enough to think that we are that dumb, you know, that we would pick somebody who is clearly a Trojan horse. So I suspect that the primary motive was to please the ultra-right wing and especially the religious right and the evangelicals, the believers and creationism, which Palin is prime among.
Well, I only have some anecdotal evidence, but friends of mine have spoken to their women friends who are excited by Sarah Palin, and apparently a lot of women don't know her positions.
No, I think I agree with you. I mean, I'm talking about women who know her positions. I mean, a lot of women and men don't know McCain's positions either because he's presented himself as a maverick rather than an extremist, which he truly is. I think the fundamental question the Democrats have to ask is, are you better off after 8 years of Bush? And if the answer is no, then don't vote for a McCain-Palin ticket that supports Bush by 90%.
But the McCain-Palin ticket do not mention Bush. They do not mention the Republican Party. They don't mention the Republican platform. Their entire campaign is based on personality, and of course she's been a massive boost in that regard. And my fear is when you talk about ignorance, more people vote for American Idol in this country than vote in elections. So in terms of an American Idol ticket, this one is reviving the base, it seems.
No, I agree with you. Knowledge is power and stupidity is defeat. And if we don't know what they represent, then we may just vote for a life story. However, I would say even on the basis of a life story, especially when it comes to Palin, she will be she will have a lot of problems because she has so clearly been opposed to every woman on the way up, you know, whether it was the woman who first supported her campaign and introduced her around in her small town where she was mayor, or the woman who was a librarian who refused to censor books and she fired her, or the sexual harasser that she tried to hire. All down the line, she has proven herself to be a woman who betrays and opposes other women in her own interest.
So what's the challenge here then for the Democrats to clarify the real resumes of John McCain and Sarah Palin, given that I don't believe that you can necessarily sway a lot of Republicans, because we live in this strange era, thanks to George W. Bush, where belief is more important than fact, and a lot of people in this country simply don't believe in data. So you can't necessarily win arguments based on data. So perhaps that's a fool's errand. But how do you clarify, for example, the people that I've spoken to who have spoken to their women friends who've expressed excitement at Sarah Palin and puzzlement when they're told, by the way, she's against a woman's right to choose?
Mm-hmm. Well, it is a challenge, and I think the Republicans are well aware of the fact that ignorance is their friend because they are keeping her from being interviewed. We have to continue to press on the point that if she can't face the U.S. press, she can't face terrorists and the Taliban. I mean, you know, it's ridiculous that she has not been available. I get no pleasure out of seeing women humiliated in public, but I also get no pleasure out of seeing women being used as ploys and then, you know, not measuring up to the same standard. Every candidate submits to press interviews, so she absolutely has to do that. Aside from depending on the press, we also have to get the word out ourselves on what these policy, never mind policy, you know, that sounds boring, what these folks mean to our daily lives and what a disaster, what an utter disaster a McCain-Palin ticket would be for the female half of this country.
Well, we need to sort of put out some scenarios here, which are futuristic but not science fiction, in the sense that it's just one vote in the Supreme Court and it's pretty clear the intention of the four, Alito, Roberts, Scalia, and Thomas. They made their intentions clear that they would overturn Roe v. Wade and kick it back to the states. So you would end up having this apartheid America where the blue states and red states would have different...
I agree, but I think that's much too... You know, that's exactly right, what you're saying. Mm-hmm. But I think what we need to make clear is that she is in support of government control of women's wombs. Well, she is talking about supporting, and McCain also supports, a human life amendment, which literally would nationalize women's bodies. So I think we just have to make the bottom line clear here, mm-hmm. and not get into it, only because we only have 2 months,
right?
To get into the tale of how it would happen, but to the point of what would happen.
Well, I was just thinking of the specter, for example, in red states of young women having to get Greyhound buses to travel to blue states, mm-hmm. and having Christian vigilantes.
No, you're right, but yeah. I utterly agree with you, Ian. You know that I do. But but I think what is more immediate is that abortions are being caused by the abstinence-only programs which Palin and McCain support.
And she stripped money from the support for young pregnant women as well.
Yeah, no, she is clearly and she's being deceptive now because she is talking about having supported her daughter's choice to have a child when mm-hmm. actually she would deny choice to every woman in this country. Mm.
Well, it's interesting, you know, Gloria Steinem, I recently spoke with a Saudi dissident in exile in London and asked him why it is that the Saudi royal family have all these billions and live in these billion-dollar mansions and have illegal whiskey and European women flowing in. Why do they are they in bed with the ultra-fundamentalist Wahhabi religious police who afflict so much control over the people in Saudi Arabia? And he said, well, that's the whole point. He said, don't you understand that if you control people's bodies politically, then they spend all their time wondering about how long their beard is and how little flesh they can show, and they become completely controlled. And, mm-hmm. and so it seems to me that at the end of the day, the real argument is about big government control of the most intimate, the last frontier, if you will, which is our own bodies.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's a larger principle, too. When we talk about reproductive freedom as a fundamental human right, that protects men as well who have been subject in this and other countries to forced sterilization. There's also enforced testing and pressure toward organ donations and so on. So what we are together, women and men, trying to say here is that the power of the government stops at our skins, and no government of right or left can intrude on someone's body. But the McCain-Palin ticket is essentially nationalizing women's bodies, which also eventually endangers men.
But it also, I think, isn't it not the ultimate in the politics of distraction, that if you are spend all of your time being obsessed by these religious distractions, you don't deal with.
I agree with you that it can be a distraction, and it certainly is in many cases for female human beings, because it has to do with our looks, and we're supposed to spend our time on changing ourselves to fit the world instead of changing the world to fit us. But when it comes to reproduction, it is the single most important fundamental issue, because if the state can't control how many children and of what race and what class and so on should they be encouraged, it takes away a fundamental ability of the state to produce soldiers and workers and so on. And that's why the control of women's bodies, especially in reproduction, is so fundamental. It's not just a distraction. It is fundamental.
Well, just in closing, Gloria Steinem, it seems in many ways this election now is shaping up as a referendum on the soul of America, in terms of whether we are, as a people, idealistic and hopeful, and or alternatively, given the derision that was clear at the Republican convention mm-hmm. towards all those who hope for a better America, mm-hmm. Almost contempt for those who dream and work for social justice and a cleaner environment mm-hmm. and better air and food for our children and rights for all citizens. They were almost exhorting the notion of cynicism. You know, we're anti-science, anti-global warming, pro-drilling, everything, and particularly the notion of shooting wolves and bears from helicopters. Is, mm-hmm. What are we celebrating here?
Which Palin enjoys doing personally. She doesn't just want to subsidize it, even though she was stopped by a court ruling from doing that, but she enjoys doing it personally. You know, I agree with you that it's a fight for the soul of America, but the soul has to be instructed by the head, so I'm not blaming individual human beings who don't have the information. I just want to get them the information so they can make their own choice about what it is. However, I do think the negative tone of the convention, and especially the divisive negativism of her speech, will work more against her. I think women are even more fed up with negative politics than men are, if you look at the public opinion polls. So in a way, the most outrageous thing about the convention was McCain getting up at the end like frosting on a poison cake and saying this was about unity and bipartisanship, because it had been nothing but divisive until that point.
Well, indeed, but it, I guess in terms of psychology, I'm still puzzled. I know that the head has to instruct the heart, but I'm still puzzled as to what it is that people find comfort in that kind of cynicism and derision.
Well, I think it goes deep. You know,
it has to be some vast denial about the comfort of not dealing with the way the world is, or something. I don't know.
But we all, to some extent, look for the familiarity of home. And if you have grown up in a very authoritarian household, it may well seem to you that it is natural to have an authoritarian system. So I don't think this is simple. When it isn't just about information. It takes us all a while to free ourselves enough to be in favor of our own enlightened self-interest. So I'm not blaming people here. I'm just saying in the next 2 months, we have the job of getting the information out in strong and understandable terms, populist terms, the terms in which we live them every day. Mm-hmm. So we know that the McCain-Palin ticket is against equal pay, is against reproductive freedom, is against sex education that would prevent abortions and unwanted births and sexually transmitted diseases. Is
against the environment.
Against protection for the environment, is in favor of drilling. So much in favor of drilling, I was amused to see that Palin has actually sued the Bush government for a protection of wolves measure that might possibly interfere with the oil company exploration. Yeah. So, you know, those simple facts and the question, are you better off now than you were 8 years ago? If the answer is no, then don't vote for somebody who's 90% in favor of it. Big, careful, big, accurate, simple, heartfelt, life-relating points is what we need.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here in Los Angeles, Gloria Steinem.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Hello again, I'm Ian Masters. I'm just speaking then with Gloria Steinem, American feminist icon, journalist, author, and women's rights advocate. And she's co-founder of the Women's Media Center and author of a number of books, including Outrageous Acts and Everyday Rebellions, Revolution from Within, and Moving Beyond Words. She also wrote an op-ed in the Los Angeles Times this week about Sarah Palin, entitled Wrong Woman, Wrong Message. I'm now speaking with Michael Cohen, who is a senior research fellow at the New America Foundation and the author of Live from the Campaign Trail, The Greatest Presidential Campaign Speeches of the 20th Century and How They Shape Modern America. He has served as a speechwriter for Senator Chris Dodd and former U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Bill Richardson, and volunteered on a number of Democratic presidential campaigns. He blogs regularly on campaign stops at the New York Times website. And in terms of this revived Republican presidential campaign, and it clearly presents renewed challenges to the Obama-Biden strategy of swing states, where they thought they were putting in a number of states in play in their favor, and now it looks like Sarah Palin is stirring up the discontented Republican base, and that may well change the equation.
I think it's certainly possible. I mean, I definitely think that she has riled up the conservative base in a serious way. And having been in St. Paul last week, I can tell you that she was the star of the show far more than frankly John McCain was. But I'm less convinced necessarily that appeal will also translate into independent and swing voters. Because I think in some ways I was a little surprised at her speech and from the partisan nature of it. And I wonder, I just question whether or not that's going to appeal to independent voters.
Well, yes. What did you say in one of your articles? Red meat with a side of mean?
Yes, exactly. Well, that was more defining the entire evening at the GOP, which is fine. I mean, every party is supposed to be partisan at some point during their conventions. I certainly expect that. But I was surprised to see somebody who was so not well-known by the American people and sort of introducing herself to Americans to take a more sarcastic and sort of snide tone. Particularly towards Barack Obama. It may work. I was just surprised. It's sort of an unusual approach for, again, somebody who is not very well known.
Well, it seems that there's a sort of an Orwellian nature to the Republican buildup to Palin and McCain speeches, in the sense that if you just keep repeating lies, I mean, it's quite brazen, much of what they said. There was even little lies. For example, in the film set up for Palin, which they had to run the next day because Giuliani waffled on a little bit. They mentioned that she knocked off she became governor by knocking off Frank Murkowski, but they referred to him as a former Democrat. I mean, this is a guy that served several terms as a Republican in the U.S. Senate and ran as a Republican. I mean, what is it about, and Karl Rove referring to her being the mayor of the second largest city in Alaska, you know, as opposed to a town of 7,500.
You know, I have to tell you, I've never seen it before. Rarely have I seen before this kind of a phenomenon. And I think what's most striking to me was her comment about the bridge to nowhere, which she clearly was in favor of. when she was governor of Alaska, and only opposed it after it was clear that she wasn't going to get federal funding for it. All politicians, you know, I think it's sort of stress the truth or say certain things and, you know, depict certain events in their favor or that politically are advantageous. But it is unusual to see somebody sort of say something that clearly is not correct, as Ms. Palin did. And I wonder whether or not that's something that will come back and haunt her. I certainly, you know, this isn't a partisan issue. I think for the good of sort of political discourse, you hope that when politicians say things that are a bit stretching the truth, that the press will sort of call them on it.
Well, we'll be joined in a moment by a Alaska radio broadcaster who's interviewed her a number of times to do some fact-checking on her. But just, Michael Cohen, back to the build-up, if you will. I mean, Mitt Romney talking about Eastern elites. I mean, a guy from Massachusetts who ran a venture capital firm and is worth hundreds of billions of dollars, who inherited hundreds of millions from his dad to begin with. I mean, and also the most amazing stuff that Giuliani was talking about, where he referred to the Democratic nominee as being too cosmopolitan. Did he realize that that was the word that that both Hitler and Stalin used to talk about the Jews taking over the world and all those other canards?
Well, I mean, I don't know about that issue, but I would say this: it was surprising as a resident of New York City as I am to hear the former mayor of my city referred to talk about as cosmopolitan. I certainly think. New York is somewhat cosmopolitan, I believe, so I was sort of surprised to hear him say that. But, again, this is the way the political game is played. I mean, the Democratic Convention, I thought it was sort of ironic or sort of somewhat humorous that it seemed like every single Democrat who spoke had a working-class background and sort of suffered through adversity. So, again, both sides are sort of playing the political cards here. But I would agree that the Republicans maybe went a little overboard in some of their assertions about Barack Obama and the Democratic Party.
But wasn't the tone of the Democratic Convention totally different? I mean, people like Pat Buchanan, who was a commentator for MSNBC, he was railing at the Democrats throughout the entire Democratic Convention, saying, "What's wrong with you guys? You're a bunch of pussies. You're not taking on the Republicans. They're just, you know, you're being so nice." And there was that feeling that somehow, perhaps Obama himself said, "Let's not be negative." But boy, the Republicans turned around and they were mean.
Yeah, but there's, you know, this is not mean. It's not necessarily equal victory on Election Day. And I was one of the analogies I thought of when watching some of the speeches was 1992 and the very different conventions he has had that year. And the similarities in 92 and 08 are quite ripe. I mean, if you think about it, both years we're dealing with an economic recession. Both years we're dealing with a fairly unpopular incumbent president, incumbent party. And Democratic focus in 92 was really on the economy, on middle class. And the Republican focus at their convention was really on sort of character, personal biography of their candidate, and also sort of pretty strong partisanship. And I just think that, in this election, the economy is the issue. I just don't think this is an issue decided by cultural issues, by social issues, even by personal biography. And on that point, there's no question, I think Republicans would even agree on this, that the Democratic Convention was much more focused on economic, you know, pocketbook issues than the Republican Convention was. And I think that's a problem for Republicans. They don't have a good economic message. Palin, for all of her positives, is not a good surrogate on economic issues. McCain, as you could tell from the speech on Thursday, is deeply uncomfortable talking about economic issues. This is a problem for them. And I think what you're going to see in the next 2 months is two very different campaigns, and one Democratic campaign that focuses primarily on the economy and economic issues, and one that focuses on character issues, that focuses on personal attributes of John McCain. It would be surprising to me if that strategy was successful in November, because it doesn't usually work. But this is an unusual year, because anything could happen.
So in other words, the party that's telling you the truth and giving you the bad news about how screwed things are, their message is going to resonate, as opposed to the party who's not even talking about Republican, not even talking about their Republican president, not even talking about their platform. They're only talking about their personality and their resumes and the heroic story of John McCain and this lady who makes moose burgers. I mean,
when you don't have much of an economic message to run on, that's what you run on. And that was, again, this was the case in 1992 when Republicans had no economic message and they ran on basically against Bill Clinton. And they ran somewhat on the personal biography of George Bush, and it didn't work. And, of course, that was one of the disastrous elections for Republicans. And, you know, it goes both ways. In 1980, the Democrats ran against Ronald Reagan. They ran against the warmonger. They ran against he was the smart enough president. And they didn't really have any kind of positive message to run at all. And not surprisingly, they were also defeated in a landslide. I just think it's very hard for any political party to win an election in a year in which, you know, 80% of the country thinks that the country on the wrong track. They're not talking about how to fix that. It's like running. People run about the economy, and they're running on something completely different. And it's unusual that that's successful. And I think one interesting also to think about is a lot of Democrats think that about 2004 is an analogy as how Republicans can run on personal biography. But in some ways, personal biography of George Bush in 2004 sort of matched up with the issues that he was focused on, which was foreign policy, which was the war on terrorism, in which they had an advantage. And those were the top issues in the campaign, and it's probably the reason why George Bush was reelected. But this year, the top issue is the economy, and I think most everyone would agree that Democrats are largely favored on that issue.
Did you think the Democrats will be able to link the particularly today's news about Freddie Mae and Fannie Mae going into receivership, and they're going to probably cost the Treasury about $6 trillion, massive increment in the national debt. That's an optimistic reading of the hole that's being dug in the American economy. You can trace much of this economic meltdown to John McCain's co-chair and former number one economic advisor, Phil Graham. I mean, the DNA of this whole meltdown goes right to him and to the bills that he slipped in the middle of night, the Enron loophole and the creation of these dark markets that allowed all of the speculation to take place. I mean, I'm asking you here, Michael Cohen, whether the Democrats are going to take the gloves off and start naming names.
See, but I have to say, I wonder whether that's going to be, whether that's something that's tangible to most Americans. To me, the big story from yesterday was the unemployment rate of 6.1%. That's a pretty high rate. That's a lot higher than we ever saw during the Clinton years. And I think that, frankly, is a much more powerful story and powerful number for Democrats to be focusing on. I think the Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac stories, while I agree with you, are very serious issues, I'm not sure they resonate with voters the same way. And I think that, you know, it's a further reminder for Democrats to at least talk about the failures of Bush administration on economic issues and linking those problems to John McCain. 6.1% is a fairly high unemployment rate, and it's pretty significant, and it indicates that this recession is not going away anytime soon. So again, I think if Democrats are wise, they will hit on that issue, because I think it's one that really resonates with a lot of Americans.
Well, I remember Dukakis was nothing but statistics, and look where it got him.
I think, you know, you can't compare Michael Dukakis to Barack Obama.
That's true.
I mean, that's not fair to either man. But the other thing is,
right, but you just said, though, in 1992, Clinton beat Bush because, various reasons that you stated, but you forgot to mention that 20 million votes went to Ross Perot. And we don't have at this point, you've got a couple of guys out there that may say Ron Paul and Barr may siphon some votes on the right, but I think that's probably been overcome, has it not, by Palin lighting up the right-wing base.
Potentially. It's hard to say. One thing I would say, though, you know, it's, keep in mind about 88, don't forget, that was a very strong economy in 1988. People were very happy with the direction of the country, which, of course, is not the case today. But, you know, I think in 92 analogy, I mean, think again, that the Republicans scored 37% of the vote that year, which was the worst major party showing since 1912. It was a largely rejection of Republican economic policies. I don't think they'll have the same result this year, because I think that people do differentiate between McCain and the Bush administration on some levels, although the Democrats are surely trying to prevent people from making that, at least forcing them to make that connection. But I think that, again, you have to focus on what the number one issue is, that's the economy. And Democrats, all they can do is run on, I think, where they have an advantage, and that's where they have the advantage. And again, you go back to 2004, Republicans had the advantage on foreign policy, and that was a, for the most part, a foreign policy election, which is unusual in American politics. And so I think that's, again, what Democrats need to do. They need to focus on the economy, and if they do that, they should be successful. I mean, every historical analogy tells you they'll be successful, but of course, we are dealing with a very unusual year with, obviously, having Barack Obama as the Democratic nominee and sort of Sarah Palin mixing things up. I personally am curious to see how Palin pans out as a pick. I would not be surprised if there's more scrutiny we have of her, the more her unfavorabilities end up by increasing. I think she may have hit a high water mark at her speech last Wednesday.
Well, I think, though, since we're going back and looking at other elections and making comparisons with this one, it seems to me that it's pretty clear that the only two Democrats that have won the White House in the last 30-odd years are two Southern governors, Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton, and that the lessons of Dukakis and Kerry and others, the graveyard lesson, is that northern liberals from the Northeast don't make it. So this year around, not only are the Democrats running the most liberal candidate they probably had in history, who's from the Northeast, who's also an African-American.
I would not say he's the most liberal by a long stretch. I would say Lyndon Johnson and FDR are obviously much more liberal than Barack Obama.
Really?
But I don't think liberals. I don't think liberals is a four-letter word this year.
You won't get an argument out of me on that one. I'm talking about the American landscape, not my political beliefs.
No, but I think out of most Americans, I don't think that liberal is the liability that it once was in American politics, because I think people have become so fed up with the direction of the country and with the way Republicans have taken the country that I don't get the sense that being a liberal is the liability that was, say, for Dukakis in '88, or even for John Kerry in 2004. I don't think the overriding perception of Obama that he's too liberal. I think the problem with Obama has is that people think he's too inexperienced, and that he's too risky of a choice. But I don't get the sense that he's suffering because of this sort of liberal moniker. Which I think is really a product of how far the Republican brand has fallen. That the capabilities they had at branding of Democrats, I don't think they're as effective as they once were.
Well, just in closing, Michael Cohen, why is it that the Democrats were not able to field their strongest ticket? If as Bill Clinton said about Obama, it's a roll of the dice, then why didn't the Democrats have their strongest ticket, which would have been, Obama-Clinton? Because it's so clear, for example, that the opening that not having Clinton on the ticket provided the Republicans was, you can directly see the connection to Sarah Palin. They just drove a Mack truck through that opening.
Well, yeah, I don't necessarily buy into the notion that Obama-Hillary ticket would have been any stronger. I think that opens up, my analogy is that this puts a live hand grenade into the Democratic ticket, particularly with Bill Clinton and his past business dealings and how that issue would have been played up by Republicans. And I'm actually not convinced that even if Hillary had been the pick, that Sarah Palin would not have been the Republican VP nominee. I mean, I think that the main rationale for McCain to pick her was that she was conservative, that she was pro-life, but also that she would shake up the ticket and that she would generate some attention for Republicans and step on Obama's convention bounce. I'm not convinced that he wouldn't have picked Palin anyway, but I just think the notion that Obama Hillary is stronger than Obama Biden, I mean, I guess on one level seems correct, but I'm not convinced of it. I just don't know how that would have played out. I think that there would have been a lot of issues. And I think, frankly, from Obama's standpoint, I think he would have been, frankly, deeply uncomfortable winning the presidency and having to govern with Hillary Clinton as VP and Bill Clinton as the vice president's husband. So I think that was a big consideration for Obama.
The second dude. Right.
The second dude, exactly.
Right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Michael Cohen.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye. Hello again, Amy and Masters. I'm just speaking then with Michael Cohen, who's a senior research fellow at the New America Foundation and the author of Live from the Campaign Trail, The Greatest Presidential Campaign Speeches of the 20th Century and How They Shaped Modern America. I'm now speaking with Shannon Moore, who's a top-rated progressive radio broadcaster in Anchorage, Alaska. She pioneered political talk radio for women in the 49th state, and on her program, she has interviewed Republican vice presidential nominee Sarah Palin numerous times, as well as other political figures in the American political scene. It seems as if, Shannon Moore, we need some fact-checking here on Sarah Palin, and there's been so much stuff floating around on the internet, it's hard to sort of sort the wheat from the chaff. There's a letter that's been widely disseminated from Anne Kilkenny. Where does an honest consumer of news go in this particular climate?
Well, you know, Anne Kilkenny is more conservative than Sarah Palin.
Uh-huh.
In her views. And what she was writing about and is very much her own experience, and you can fact check the things that she wrote about when it came to the budget, when it came to the story of the librarian trying to be dismissed because she wouldn't ban books,
mm-hmm.
And the fact that, you know, she had enough people rally behind her that her termination letter was withdrawn. You can fact check all that stuff, and Anne has lived in the Valley for a very long time. She's very politically active in local politics, and that's her experience. And I have no reason to think that she was being disingenuous. In fact, I think she's being pretty brave, because I know that I can tell you from my own experience, it's a dangerous thing to come out and say, let's talk about these policies, let's talk about these character issues that we've seen as Alaskans.
So what's going on there? Why is there an intimidation? I get the impression that a lot of Alaskans are proud and some are embarrassed.
Well, I don't think very many Alaskans that I've talked to are embarrassed. I think there's certainly shock, like, really, of all the people that are over a certain age and born on Native soil available, this is who they picked. Wow. But for me, I'm very proud of Sarah Palin. I mean, I know her. I've watched her policies very closely, every day, talking about different decisions she was making for the state and being critical when I didn't agree with them, and also encouraging my listeners to call her when she did things that I thought were good, whether it be for the environment or for the budget or for whatever. You know, you kind of have to do that when you live in a state that's twice the size of Texas with less population than Brooklyn. But, I'm glad that she got up there and did her best. But it's not if she could be vice president. It's how she would be that bothers me. And it's not if she could unite the Republican Party. She certainly can and has. I don't think she can unite the nation. A ticket with John McCain and Sarah Palin won't unite. It's divided us here in this small population. Why would it do anything different there?
But Shannon Moore, explain the atmosphere of intimidation, if that's what you're implying. Why, if a conservative Republican who knows this woman well is providing the public with pretty neutral information that's very useful for us to understand who this person that came out of nowhere is, why has that generated an atmosphere of intimidation in Alaskan politics?
Well, it's interesting that Sarah Palin's biggest critics, certainly on the radio or in newspapers or anything else, have been very conservative Republicans. They call her a liberal socialist because of the fact that she really wanted to get legislation passed, so she made deals with the Democrats in Juneau for things like project labor agreements or different environmental standards or these sorts of things. She made deals with them to get these passages, and they were able to actually get some forward movement as a state as well. But she has really been criticized by the far right, and they're in way more of a pickle right now than I am, because where are they going to go? Are they going to support Obama? Possibly do that.
Yeah, but let's do a reality check here. Sarah Palin has Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck around the moon. They are so excited. They are thrilled. They're bouncing off the ceilings.
Well, I think they are, not anything on policy, but on, because they probably don't know about her policies. I think they're probably around the moon because their party has been so fractured because of George Bush. I mean, at their convention, they're saying bringing honor and dignity back to the White House. From whom? Their party leader. And they're like, we need to take back Washington. From who? From themselves? I mean, really? Do they really think we're going to buy that? And they certainly, that was their projection. And you know, the Republican Party is very much back together where they weren't, you know, 10 days ago.
So some of this, I mean, again, just the need to fact check, because just, I think, 2 days ago in Wisconsin at a big rally, in introducing his vice president, John McCain, said, isn't she great? She's the one, I really love the one that she sold the governor's jet on eBay for a profit. Well, just in terms of fact-checking, that's all completely wrong, right?
Yeah, and it was hard when I was watching the speech to be able to, you know, she looked beautiful and she was just doing such a great job, but she was saying things that just weren't true. I mean, she was saying things like, I put the jet on eBay. She did put the jet on eBay, but it didn't sell. And then it went to some sort of auctioning, you know, of planes, and we lost $600,000 on it.
And it was sold to a campaign contributor, I understand.
Yes.
I don't know whether there's a link there, but it, well,
I don't know. I asked the question at the time if there was, but just because this is such a small town, or in this small sort of political circle, less than 700,000 people, you run in. You know, that could have been just a coincidence.
Well, when you say less than 700,000 people. That story is not being told by the top of the Republican ticket and by the Karl Roves of the world. They're making this woman sound like she's a seasoned veteran and all of this stuff. And in fact, Rove passed it the other day by saying she's the mayor of the second largest city in Alaska.
Well, that simply isn't true. Fairbanks is the second.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it should be explained, though, that for most towns in Alaska, Wasilla is considered a large town.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, most towns are, you know, less than probably 1,500 people. So, yeah, in light of that, but no, it's not even, I think Wasilla may be in the top 10, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not saying a lot when you have towns that have townships and zip codes that have 40 people in them.
Right, but the new sort of Orwellian tactic now is to say that this woman has tremendous executive experience, and they cite her governorship and her mayor and all this stuff. And the context of
can you imagine?
This is less than in the average congressional district here in the lower 49, right?
Can you imagine if John McCain had appointed, anybody else, I don't think there would have been the buzz. But if Barack Obama had appointed the governor who was the former mayor of Richmond from Virginia,
mm-hmm.
Karl Rove, when he found out he was on the top of the list, went off about, you know, Richmond's only the 105th largest city in the country, and give me a break, and he's only been the governor for 2 years. I mean, he went off on that being a selection, and then they turned around and got this. So, you know, And she also said, you know, I said no thanks for the earmarks, as though that's being a maverick. She said, no, we're not going to build the bridge. But she kept the $230-odd million for other projects. So she kept the earmark money and put it into other state infrastructure, but didn't build the bridge because it had become such a soundbite. So it was really disingenuous to put her record out there the way that they did.
So, do you feel, as a journalist, that you're a necessary resource here for fact checking? Because clearly the strategy with Sarah Palin is to keep her under wraps, and I don't expect to see her on Meet the Press very soon. So, where is the real vetting going to come from?
Well, that's the thing, is now the press has to do it, and I know that even the Frontiersman, a newspaper out in Wasilla, that had covered her during the mayoralship, they hadn't had anyone come in and even look through their articles until last Tuesday, and that was a journalist. I mean, she wasn't vetted by John McCain, certainly, and And now it's up to the press. And I can tell you, Wasilla's population now has doubled because of the journalists. There are so many journalists here, and they are uncovering things that are less than savory. And it's really too bad, because I think that if people were really, I was really looking forward to the conversation of policy, of, you know, who can really provide leadership. And the fact is, Sarah Palin is the real deal. She is who George Bush thinks he is. She has very many similar sort of tactics and style, like how she goes in, fires everyone with experience, puts her own people in who are very loyal to her. And right now we're seeing that, you know, we've got six or seven people who were supposed to be testifying in this Troopergate scandal, and now they've all decided, oh, we don't have to. And it's very like, Josh Bolton and Harriet Myers and Karl Rove saying, we're not answering subpoenas. We don't have to. We serve the governor, not the state. Well, that's very difficult for me, because it's just too parallel of what I've seen for the last 8 years.
So when you say she's more George Bush than George Bush, is that to say that she's a real Christian fundamentalist, whereas he talks the talk, but people don't quite know whether it's a political gambit on his part?
Exactly. I mean, Sarah Palin has the clout to be able to say, I'm gonna try to get judges in that will reverse Roe v. Wade, because look at my own choices in my own life and my own family. And she doesn't see it as a carrot to get people to vote. She sees it as a mission. She wants creationism taught in schools, and she wanted abstinence only taught in schools. And, you know, abstinence only works until it doesn't. You know, and when it's done working, you're pregnant. It's not even realistic. And then it didn't work at her house. Why would it work in the country or in the state? And when you look at things like the fact, I mean, I interviewed her when she was running, and I asked her, even in the event of incest and rape, we live in the state with the highest amount of incest and rape. Even in those cases, you would say no. And she said, absolutely. I would choose life. And that was sort of bizarre. And then I thought, well, maybe she's going to do something about our laws when it comes to incest and rape. And the only piece of legislation that I found over the last 2 years when it comes to rape is that the legislature passed a law banning the sale or buying of the Quentin Tarantino action figure, The Rapist.
Well,
I mean, it's just really disconnected. She's also said, you know, that...
So she's into the rapture then, I take it, is she?
Well, I've been saying for a long time that the rapture is not an environmental policy. And that's what, you know, when she's in denial of any sort of climate change, and we're in Alaska and we've got towns washing away that have been there for thousands of years, that's a problem. When she's suing the federal government, this is classic. George Bush finally put polar bears on the endangered species list. That was an indication to me that it's probably too late and we should just put them all in zoos now. But she is suing the federal government over the listing of polar bears on the endangered species list because it could affect drilling on the North Slope. So that's not standing up to big oil. It's standing up for big oil, and it's really a denial of something that's if it seems obvious enough to George Bush, you would think she could get on board with it.
Well, I think that's probably what they're going to concentrate on in her campaign will be her, in quotes, expertise on oil, because all of those people in the Alaska delegation had a hard hat saying drill now. The campaign is clear. They're not going to mention Republican Party, Republican platform, or the Republican president. They're going to mention personality, mavericks, reformers, taking on Washington, and drill, drill, drill.
Well, what you have to do to be a maverick Republican in this state is not be indicted, not have your house raided by the FBI, and not be sitting in jail right now for selling your votes to big oil. And for the last year, I've been sitting in the courthouse more than I'd like watching these trials come out of where big oil bought our legislature. I mean, we've been colonized to a certain extent by industry here in Alaska because we have so few people, and they're able to be, you know, swayed by, like right now, everyone's getting a check on Friday for $1,200 worth of energy rebate, and we're also getting, I think, $2,200 as a dividend from the royalty. So everybody's getting $3,200 on Friday in their accounts, and it's hard not to think, wow, the governor's doing a good job when every man, woman, and child gets that dumped into their family.
Well, I'd love to talk more with you, Sharon Moore, because clearly there's a lot more to be learned. We've run out of time here, but I thank you so much for joining us in Los Angeles.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
Thank you. Hello again, I'm Ian Masters. Just speaking then with Sharon Moore, who's a top-rated progressive radio broadcaster in Anchorage, Alaska. She pioneered political talk radio for women in the 49th state, and she's interviewed Republican vice presidential nominee Sarah Palin a number of times. This program is produced by Louis Vandenberg. Elliot Fong is the associate producer, and Melissa Figueroa is the engineer.